We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Basketball, of course, taking center stage this week. The men at home against Colorado on Thursday, and then Saturday. Time change on the game Saturday, 5 o'clock now instead of the original scheduled time, so make a note of that. And the women's basketball team will be on the road this week against the Mountain Schools. And we're also going to talk a little track and field and the Hammer event for the Bears and the women's track and field program with the school record holder in the Hammer. So that'll be in segment number 3. But we start with Roman Davis, a redshirt junior with the men's basketball team. They'll take on the Buffaloes on Thursday and the Utes on Saturday, trying to get that first win in conference play. And you guys have played really well to start ball games in the conference. The starts have been really good, and even at halftime, you've been in virtually every game. It's the second half where it kind of gets a little bit away from you. What's been the reason for the good starts, and then what happens?
I just think, Todd, we just need to focus harder on making sure we finish games and keeping up the consistency of the good things that we're doing that has us in such great positions at the end of the first half. I think that's what we're lacking right now. And I think that's something we're improving on every day through practice and more games and more play time.
It's a young team. You're one of the veterans. You're the only one left from an NCAA tournament, right? Everybody else has come and gone. And so, I mean, you and Paris, obviously the most experienced guys. He had 2 years at Boise State. What's it like to be, for the first time in a while, kind of the gray hair on the team?
It's actually eye-opening because before this year, I've always been the youngest on every team I've been on, and it's just such a role change for me, having to be one of the guys that's always having to be doing and saying the right things because I'm an example to these guys on and off the court, so I feel like I've been doing a good job of doing that as of late, and I will continue to do that because I want to lead the young guys in the right direction and show them the right things to do so we can build this program up.
You're Mr. Hustle on this team. You're a guy that's always in motion at both ends of the court, And you got your first career start this last week at Washington. It's been a long time in coming. What was it like for you to be out there with the opening introductions and getting your name called on the PA?
It was a great experience. So something I could tell my kids. You know, it's been a long time coming, but I've really worked hard, man. And for it to finally, all my work come to fruition, it's a beautiful thing. I'm just, you know, continuously working on my games so I can, you know, help my team win games. That's the bottom line for us. So I was excited. And as long as Coach starts me, he knows he's going to get somebody who plays with maximum effort on both ends at all times. So I'm excited to keep doing my job for the team.
You know, the game against Washington, the good news is you get a start. The bad news is you got to go defend Noah Dickerson. You're giving away, I don't know, 50 pounds. What do you weigh? Because he's got to be 260.
I'm 210 on a good day, eating all my meals. Dickerson, I mean, he came in to Washington the same time I came into Cal, so he's always been somebody who was a force on the scouting report. So it was a nice assignment for my first start. But I was ready. Coach told me how to guard him, you know, just use my quickness and athleticism, trying not to let him get a catch, and I did my best. I think he ended up scoring off of a lot of free throws in anyway, but Coach told me I did a really good job as far as not allowing many post catches, because that would have been for sure a basket probably, because, I mean, Dickerson's a good player.
Yeah, he is a good player, and I think, and I don't have the stats, but I think he gets fouled more than anybody in this league. He goes to the free throw line a lot. He's active and he's big, and it's tough to stop him once he gets the basketball. And with you in the lineup, you guys spurted out to an 11-point lead, and so your energy and your efforts helped get the Bears into that 11-point lead. The previous game, you had a career high against Washington State with 7 rebounds. And I don't know what it is about the Cougars, but it brings out the best in you, because last year you had your career high 15 points and 6 rebounds in a game against the Cougars. This year you set your career with 7 rebounds against the Cougars. What is it about the crimson and gray that brings out the best?
Red's my favorite color.
No,
I'm just kidding. I couldn't explain last year. Coach just gave me an opportunity, and he trusted me last year, and I just went. I just wanted to make plays to help us win. That's every time I'm out on the court, that's what I look to do. And Coach texted me before the game this year and told me, you know, reminded me of what I did last year and said I need some of that same energy. So, unfortunately, I couldn't score as well, but I still was out there, you know, giving my all on every play on both ends.
Well, that's what you do, and that's all you can do, is give your best to both ends of the court. All right, let's get away from basketball. We're taping this on Tuesday of this week, first day of classes. How did the first day back go?
First day was good. Got up early, had an 8 a.m., walked about 2 miles to a class.
What was that?
What was the hall? It was far. Like, something I've never heard of before. I was like, wow, what is this? It was nice class. Nice to get back in the flow. Had a lot of time over the break, and, you know, it's just idle hands do the devil's work, so I was ready to get back into something else besides just basketball every day. So, yeah, it was a good change of pace.
What were the two classes today?
Legal Studies 132 AC and Legal Studies 100.
What is it about Legal Studies that piques your interest?
I've actually always been interested in law since I was a kid. My mom used to sit me down. We would watch so much Law and Order, SVU, Criminal Intent, and the NCIS and the forensic shows. So, I mean, I've had just a crazy dose of law and law enforcement. So, you know, most kids would be sick of it, but I actually kind of like it. And it's something I would look to do outside of basketball when I'm done playing.
Well, by now you might have your doctorate in jurisprudence by watching all of that, all those legal shows and a couple of classes here as well. And is there anything in particular about the law that you like, or anything maybe you'd like to continue in after you graduate?
I haven't really thought that far ahead yet. I was definitely thinking, you know, I was just running ideas by my dad, and like, hey, Dad, I'm not sure what I want to do after I'm done playing with whatever I do. And he said, you know, you could take a look in either law enforcement, or like, I'm a smart guy, I can have a desk job. So I haven't really, you know, sat down and worked out steps of if I'm going to go to law school or not. So it's a lot of things up in the air, but I do know that I will be doing something with my legal studies degree when I graduate from here.
Oh, that's awesome. Good luck to you on that front. From Southern California, Carson, but you went to Windward High School, which is actually close to UCLA. We talked about this down there because I wasn't sure where Windward Prep was. So did you commute from Carson to that? Did you do that every day? I mean, that's a pretty with the traffic and all that stuff. What time did you have to get started?
Oh, my goodness. I was actually thinking about this a couple of weeks. Me and my sister, because she went to my high school too, we were getting up at 6 a.m., having to leave the house by 6:30. My junior and senior year, I started driving. So it was just me and her in the car, driving an hour and a half with that L.A. traffic. And it's just, oh, my goodness, so slow. Like, I'm falling asleep at the wheel early in the morning. And on the way back is worse because, you know, you get out at 3 and you're just catching that rush kind of after work, you know. And it's just the same thing. I'm, like, falling asleep at the wheel. And I'm just looking at my sister, do you want to drive? Because I can't take this anymore.
Now, Windward Prep, I think, and I was looking this up, is a relatively maybe 500, 550 total students. Is that correct or not? Is it larger than that?
Oh, no, that's actually right on point. My graduating class was 94.
Oh,
I knew everybody first name basis, and that's just how the school is. I knew people. It's 7th through 12th. I knew, if not everyone, a decent amount of people from every grade, especially right under juniors and sophomores, because those are most of my teammates. With a graduating class in 94, you really get to know everybody, like everybody, everybody's parents. It was just a big family, and that's what I really loved about when we were at school.
And it sounds like virtually everybody at the school participates in some form of athletics as well, because they're really good in virtually everything that they participate in.
From football side, one of my best friends is also from Carson, Breland Brandt. He was tried out for football and immediately picked up scholarships from every Pac-12 school and just tons of scholarships all over the place. And he was at UCLA and unfortunately had to medically retire. Another good friend of mine, Roy Hemsley, is at SC. Transferred right now. He's at ASU, I believe, playing football still. I could go across in women's basketball. Oh, my goodness. They were on a tear all my 4 years. I don't remember them losing a game, honestly.
Really?
You got Jordan Canada, Amani Stafford, Courtney Jaco. I could just go on with names.
What was it? How did you get to Windward Prep? What was the reason behind going there and making that decision?
Well, I knew coming into high school that schools like Windward were the best schools as far as preparing me for the college level academically and athletically, because I was at a great school and we played against a lot of great competition. We played against Sierra Canyon, which had at the time Cody Riley, who's at UCLA, Adam Sekou, who's at San Diego State, DeVoe Ramsey, who's at ASU, and then there's other nights where I'm playing Viewpoint, who has had Kristen Juzang, who's at Harvard now. Then, let's see, Crossroads, which is where Sharif went. I feel like it was the best league in Southern California as far as academics and athletic talent across the board.
And then how and why the decision on Cal? I know Konzo Martin, I can remember talking to him about you, and he said, hey, where do you see this Roman Davis guy? He's not going to back down from anybody. He's going to get after it. It doesn't matter if he's giving up size or whatever. He's going to get after people. Why was Cal the spot for you to land?
Cal actually has always been a dream school of mine. With when I was younger, it was UCLA, USC, and Cal. I knew I wanted to stay in California. I wanted to stay on the West Coast. Took a couple of trips on the East Coast for visits. I was like, I'm not an East Coast guy. A little too cold for me. When it was time for me to make decisions, there were so many coaching changes, at all the schools I was considering. I was actually going to do a prep year in Boston. And out of nowhere, I got a call from Yanni Huffnagel and, you know, told me that Coach Martin was interested and wants me to come out and work out for the team. To see how that goes. I went, and then the day after, he offered me a scholarship. I was like, I'm here, right on the spot, through the phone. I mean, there's no other, because I definitely didn't want to go to Boston. Too cold for me. And that's the story behind that.
Yeah, too cold for a lot of us. I grew up on the East Coast, and I've been out here now for a long time. I'm not going back there. There is no way I could go through those. You know, not only can I not go through those winters back there, Roman, I can't go through the summers because of the humidity. It's humid, so it's like the fall is pretty nice. The spring is okay, but boy, it's tough to beat the Bay Area. You have seasons out here, and you know, even today it might have been 40 or 42 degrees. That's not too bad. It's not snowing, that's for sure. All right, what's it going to take to this week turn this thing around and get a couple of wins?
It's going to take what I said as far as being consistent throughout an entire game. If we can just put an entire 40 minutes together of us doing our jobs on both ends and finishing the game, then we'll have more than a better chance to win both of these games. I think both of these games are very winnable, and we have enough talent to get it done. It's just up to us executing the game plan that coach comes up with for us, and if we handle that, that should be the game, honestly.
Well, we look forward as well. Thursday against Colorado, that's an 8 o'clock start. We'll be on the air at 7:30 with a pregame show, and then Saturday night again. A reminder: the Utah game. It's at now a 5 o'clock game. We'll be on the air with a pregame show beginning at 4:30. Roman, appreciate it very much. Have a great weekend. Good luck with the legal studies and everything that follows that as well. And we look forward to watching you this weekend.
Thank you for having me, Todd. Pleasure to be here.
You got it, Roman Davis, Cal basketball. Joining me now on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, is Rasay Caldwell, a graduate transfer, the first ever in the history of women's basketball here at Cal, joining us today to talk hoops and some other things. Rasay, first of all, thanks for spending the time being with us today. And talk about being a graduate transfer, first of all, because we've seen this in other sports, football primarily, a little bit of basketball here as well, but we haven't seen it amongst women that much. Tell us the why and the wherefore and how did it end up that you ended up back here in California, having started at UCLA and then going to Texas Tech.
Yeah, so I started at UCLA as a freshman, stayed there 1 year, and my dad became the assistant coach at Texas Tech, which led me to make the decision to go over there. He was my coach really my whole life. He was especially my skill set coach, and that meant a lot to me. So I played under him for 1 year. He ended up leaving, going back to his club team and throwing tournaments. And I stayed an extra year. Ended up getting hurt, like a shoulder injury, December 31st in our second conference game. And at that time, I knew really, with our coach being fired the next day, that I wanted to go into a program that was already established with someone that I could trust, someone that I had a relationship already. Mm-hmm. And the obvious answer for me was Coach G. She's been recruiting me since I was in middle school, probably sixth or seventh grade, and just my ties to her from the USA basketball team. You know, she's on the committee, so I've been around her for years. And really, I have never been around someone who doesn't like Coach G. I think she's a college coach favorite. You see a lot of my teammates at UCLA love her. You see people around the pack love her and respect her for what she's done for the women's game. So that was a short answer for me in coming here, and it's been a smooth transition, I would say.
So you got a graduate degree program now. What did you graduate from Texas Tech in? What was your interest?
Okay, so I graduated from Tech with a bachelor's in business, and I came here, and now I'm studying public health. It's really sped up. It's a lot. It's a lot of projects. It's different from, I think, undergrad work, because I think some undergrad work has to do with some busy work, you know, and they teach you the fundamentals, whereas you go into graduate school and it's a lot of projects. You're working with groups all of the time. I actually just started school last week and I had 4 assignments due last night. So it's very accelerated. But I'm actually really proud of the way I'm handling it, just because it is so accelerated, and I have a job and I'm playing basketball. So I think my parents tell me they're proud of me all the time, just my time management. I think I'm doing pretty good.
Well, it's a nice transition into the real world, because now you've got an internship with the Warriors, I understand. Is that
yes.
correct? And what are you doing with the Warriors? What are your responsibilities down there?
Yeah, so Coach G, let's just start off with with her. All thanks to her. She got my foot in the door with my internship and job at the Warriors. I get to be on the court with the team. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool throwing pocket passes off of pick and roll to DeMarcus Cousins and being Steph and Clay's point guard and KD's pin down person. And then when the boys are in town, like they aren't now, they don't come back till the 29th. I am actually in the front office. So today I was doing some depth chart stuff, looking at some veterans that we could possibly pick up. So to be able to get the on-court experience and off-court experience is going to be really good for my resume and my experience, because I do want to be a GM one day. Mm-hmm. So I owe everything to Coach G for this experience.
Well, Bob Myers, of course, is a local product, mm-hmm. but he also went to school at UCLA, so you got kind of a double in with him there, right?
Yeah, we got a little bit of a tie with that. Still go Bears, though, I would say.
Go with the Bears, I suppose, the baby Bears. That's what I call UCLA. Well, what is it about the being a, what is it about being a GM at the NBA or maybe even the WNBA level that really excites you?
Yeah, so I've always been a hoop head. I remember waking up at 6 a.m. to go work out with my dad, and we'd come back and he'd make me my breakfast, my oatmeal and toast. And while I was eating and getting ready, I'd be watching NBA TV. I remember skipping Halloween's because it was NBA opening night. So basketball has always been what I was most passionate about, but what's always on my mind. I study it all the time. That's what I do in my free time. Instead of watching movie shows, I watch basketball. So I think my dad ended up putting in my mind a little bit that I'm really good at seeing a player's weaknesses and strengths after a couple times from seeing them. Mm-hmm. And my passion is there. I know how, like, I'm thinking that point guard would be really good with that big, or that lineup looks really good. And I've done that from a young age. So he was like, you could possibly be a GM. You keep on working at it. And just being, I guess, with the different programs that I've been with and the coaches that I've been with, the brilliant coaches that I've been with, I've been able to look at it from a coach's perspective as well. So I think all that experience is really going to help me for what I want to do.
Remind me never to be in a fantasy league with you, because there's no way you're not going to win that thing.
It's
based
so
on
funny. I've never done any fantasy stuff. Me and my dad just go at it back and forth. And one of my mentors in life, Kyle Moore, he texts me every day, like, what do you think about this one and this one, or who's going to win this matchup today? So I guess they prepare me for what I'm going to do.
Oh, that's awesome. Good for you. And good luck with that as well, because we now have women coaching at virtually all levels as well. So, I mean, it's a wide open opportunity for everybody these days. And so you've got your foot already in the door pretty far. So I'm sure you'll do fine. Last two games at home against the Washington schools, you got to score some points, 27 total points in the two games, 15 against the Huskies on Sunday. Just tell us about the team, 3-3 in the league right now. And you've got a challenging next couple of weeks, starting with Utah this week, Colorado, twice against Stanford next week, and then the Oregon school. So of those six games, five are against teams that are in the top 25. Utah got in this week. Just your thoughts about the challenge ahead for the team.
Yeah, I feel like every game, every week is a challenge being the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. We're so deep, and I feel like we're consistently been that deep for some years now. I don't think that the pack is top heavy, I would say. Like, everyone through it is, some conferences are top heavy.
There's no easy outs.
Exactly. Oh. Your first four schools are your heavy hitters, and everybody else are some cupcakes. But throughout the pack, you have a chance of dropping one every night if you're not intense, focused, and locked in on your game plan, I would say. So these upcoming weeks, I know we've bounced back from a rough stretch that we were in. I'm very proud of our team chemistry and the fact that we never disconnected as a group. We, if anything, we got better. We never, I guess, lost our moxie about us, I would think. And just very proud of, okay, we won this one next game. We had our film today. We went over our good plays, but then we went over the ones that we needed to get better on, and now we went over Utah film. So it's very like next one, we're on a mission to do what we're supposed to do in our conference and finish where we're supposed to finish. So I think we're just locked in and taking it one game at a time, not overlooking anybody.
What's it like to play with somebody like Christina Nigue, who this past week was named the Player of the Week in the conference? Double-double every game this year, dominating force. What's it like to play with somebody like that in the post?
Yeah, I've never really played with – I haven't played with anybody like Christine before.
Not many people have.
Yeah, I play with Monique Billings, but as freshmen, you know, we got some time, but I think obviously you saw the way that Monique progressed from her that jump she made from freshman to sophomore year to junior to senior year being a pro. For where she is now, I've never played like someone like Christine. She makes the game a lot easier, I would say, for your point guard and guards, period. And vice versa, I feel like our guards and Kiana and Teezy are making the games a lot easier for her. I think in the past, you've been able to double her. And now, with the way that we're starting to click offensively, I think we're making you pay now. So now I think with the Washington game, you saw that she had a lot of single coverage, which she hasn't seen in a long time. And so it was a field day for her. I mean, we saw with her numbers, 30 and 20 or some crazy stat line like that, video game numbers, as we call them. And also I'd like to point out that she is grown into one of the best teammates that I've had during practice. And it's important to see how she acts whenever people aren't watching. You know, everyone can put on a front whenever you're in a game, and but whenever you're in practice and no one cares about or no one is hearing about how good of a teammate or how bad of a teammate you are, Christine is the first person to tell our guards to shoot. She's our first person to tell the guards to score. She's one of our loudest communicators, one of our best communicators, intense as well, and focused on winning. So I've never heard Christine talk about her numbers ever. I think coach congratulated her on the Pac-12 player and she got embarrassed. You know, just her being that kind of a humble teammate that she's grown into is big for us. When your best player has that type of mentality, I don't know how your team can't feel like a family, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Big ups to her. I mean, she's an incredible, and she's also an incredible teammate.
All right. Earlier this year, you started conference play against the UCLA and USC, and you obviously had ties to both teams. One was the coaching staff and at UCLA, and USC was your sister. Tell us what kind of a player she is and how often you guys were in the backyard going one-on-one growing up.
Yeah. That USC game was unreal, you know. I knew whenever I transferred from UCLA, I would have my extra year. And the original plan was to probably play with Desi. Mm-hmm. And then when I knew she made the great decision to go to USC and I knew I was going to go to Cal, I mean, it was like, okay, well, next play. Like, obviously, we're going to play against each other. I was looking forward to the game, just playing against my baby. I mean, it's my baby sister. It's my best friend. I was very locked in, though. I think she was, too. It was more like we're competitors, and I feel like that was because we had been training against each other our whole life. So we've never played on the same team ever, so just being against each other, it felt very normal. Mm-hmm. I think the part that felt so real for me, though, was seeing the USC on her jersey. Mm-hmm. That's when I saw her in warm-ups, and I was like, wow. Like, she's really there. She's really living out her dream at an incredible university like USC. And then she ended up starting that game, played a lot of minutes, made an impact on the game. And that's when I was like, I'm such a proud sister. Like, I could not be more proud of Desi, of what she's done in a freshman. As a freshman in the Pac-12, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I got to go through it with my best friends and Monique Billings during Canada, Kelly Hayes and LaJanae Drummer. We had 7 freshmen on that team, so we were never alone. Mm-hmm. Desi only has 2 freshmen, including her. So she's handled it impeccably well, and I just can't be any more proud of her.
Yeah, well, I'm sure she's proud of you as well, because you set the path for her. I mean, even though you're several years older than her. All right, you did look at Utah. Tell us what we can expect to see from the Utes this week.
Yeah, a good shooting team, very dynamic guards that we know. I think they start three-point guards, and they make really good decisions. We know that they like to play with some pace, so and they do a lot of ball screens, so I think that's going to be key. And I think just getting back to playing how we have been playing these last, I think the last four games, even though we didn't have the outcome of the Arizona State game, I think we played well. We played with some grit, some fight, and it came down to the last, whatever it is. I think four of our last five games have come down to, I think, the last minute and last possession game, one possession game. Mm-hmm. So I think just being able to play in transition and get the ball where we need to get it is going to be key for us to keep being all successful in the pack.
You know, when you were in the Big 12 Conference, you did not generally go to places like Los Angeles or Phoenix or Seattle, big markets. You had some little small places. Do you have any memories of any one of those road trips that was like, oh my goodness gracious, what are we doing here?
Yeah, so, wow. Iowa State was cold. I think it was snowing. Iowa State.
It's always cold in Ames.
Yeah. Ames is a very hard place to play, I would say. Ames is the hardest out of my whole career to play. Their fans are incredible.
They are good.
They're loud, rowdy. They're not afraid to talk trash to you. and I appreciate that. As a competitor, I feel like a lot of people appreciate that. It's fun. I feel like we need that more in girls' basketball. Kind of let us go. Kind of let us be competitive with one another. So that was a really hard place to play. Norman is really hard to play, Oklahoma. Also, credit to Sherry Cole. I mean, she just makes that game hard. Who else? Baylor has great fans. UT, I liked playing in Austin. Austin was more of a big marketplace. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even Tech, playing at home was great. The fans were incredible. Great support behind that team. And I think even now, you kind of seeing like a change in their program, and I think the fans are behind them. So playing Tech at home is pretty nice too.
When you were at UCLA, did you play in Pullman? When the one year that you were at UCLA, did you guys play at Washington State?
Wow.
Because that's kind of the one trip where it's a little different than all the others.
I ended up getting hurt early January.
Okay.
Right before our Stanford game, I think I only played a couple of conference games. So whenever I hurt my knee, I wasn't able to travel. It was bad for my knee. I was going to get swollen and at risk for like more medical complications. So they didn't want me to travel. So unfortunately, I'll never be able to go to Oregon because I never got to go to Oregon. And, you know, they only come here once this year. My first time at Arizona was this past weekend, two weekends ago. Yeah. So I don't think I ever made that Pullman trip. But I for sure did make that Utah-Colorado trip.
Yeah, that's one of the tougher ones. Those are the toughest two trips because of the travel in between. Yeah. We got to get on a plane, which you have to do in the Big 12 as well. You're not going to take a bus between. Well, you didn't play many back-to-backs, did you, on the road?
Yeah, so I think we play for Big 12. It's Tuesday, Saturday. And also they charter. So that's one of the benefits of playing in the Big 12, I would say, is being able to leave right after practice when your school is done. You go there at nighttime. Mm-hmm. You play that day, and then right after the game, you're back. So you're not missing school, really. And you don't have to bridge that gap and go to the next city and stay one day. It's a quick trip, you know. You could pack a carry-on if you wanted to.
I would imagine not a whole lot of direct flights from Stillwater to Waco. Right. That's just my guess. I haven't looked at all of, or Lubbock. Yeah. Not a lot of those direct flights. But anyway, this week you guys will travel to the mountain schools, Utah and Colorado. Hopefully you keep the winning streak going and then come back home. And one full week, one entire week spent on one team, and that'll be Stanford next week. So that's a little unique as well, but it'll be fun to watch. Anyway, Rasay, thanks for dropping by. We appreciate it. Good luck in the basketball, and hopefully one of these days we'll see you at maybe Secaucus, New Jersey, up there when they have the NBA lottery. You'll be maybe at one of the tables representing somebody sometime.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. When we come back, we'll talk a little track and field. The Hammer is an interesting event. Dates back to the early 1500s with Henry VIII, when he allegedly threw a sledgehammer, and then it became a sport. Joining me now on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, is Cameron Rogers from Richmond, British Columbia. She's a sophomore hammer thrower for the women's track and field team, which opens up its season next week at the Husky Invitational. We were just up there, and they got a really nice facility up there. And every year the Bears go up there several times, it seems, for the indoor. And so that'll be the first competition of the year. And, of course, then the Bears will have a couple of home meets. There'll be the Cal opener in early March, and then the Brutus Hamilton, which is always one of the great, great meets. And joining us now is Cameron. And, in fact, it was at the Brutus Hamilton that you had your best throw last year when you set the Cal record and the under 21 Canadian record as well. So congratulations on the day, school record holder. First of all, just why did you get involved with a hammer?
So for me, my experience with hammer started out kind of in a weird way. My mom's a hairdresser, and so she had some clients and friends who were part of the track club that I am a part of at home. And so for a while, they kept telling me, you should come out, you should, you know, join the club and see what you like. And I finally came out one day, and that's when I met my first coach, Richard Collier. So that's where my career with hammer started out.
What did he say? Here's a hammer, go throw it? How'd it work?
Basically, that's basically how it happened. It was, here is a hammer, and let me show you the basics of how to throw it. And I looked at, I remember looking at him and just going, this looks like a murder weapon. I don't, like, well, how do I throw this? What is this? And now it is my, and now it's my sport of choice. It's, we're just kind of funny to look back and just think, I had no clue what a hammer was before that day.
How heavy is the ball for the women?
So for women, it is 4 kilograms, which is 8.8 pounds. And then for men, it is 16 pounds or 9.27 kilograms, I believe.
For the women, I think it's 3 feet, 11 inches. They got a chain attached to it. I think for the men, it's 3 feet, 11 and a half inches. It's just like slightly longer, which is a little unusual.
Slightly longer, and their weight is actually 7.26 kilograms, and just longer because, I mean, heavier ball, so you would need to get a little more momentum and power on it, I think. So that is what the longer wire is for.
It's basically like flinging a small bowling ball through the air and see how far you can throw it, right?
It is, yeah. The men's hammer, it's the same. Actually, men's hammer and men's shot put, both are 7.26 kilograms, and they're both the weight of a bowling ball, which is crazy. It's crazy to think about. You're basically throwing a bowling ball on a wire, but it's so much fun, and it's so exciting to watch.
It is an exciting event to watch because their speed, power, timing is critical. And obviously, there's this degree of intrigue and sometimes scariness involved too, because you have seen, I have seen, covering various meets, the ball. I mean, it's supposed to go somewhat straight out of this net area, but oftentimes it goes way out of whack.
There are definitely times where it has hit the cage or where it's gone in areas that are not the opening at the front. I have one crazy.
Go ahead.
I have one crazy story. So when I was in Poland in 2016 for Worlds, for my first World U20 Championships meet, I remember watching the men's hammer throw, and I mean, when the guys throw, it's always so exciting to watch. I mean, it's a heavier ball, so there's just more power that you have to put on it just because of the weight difference and everything. So it's always just exciting for that. But I was watching the guys throw, and I don't remember who it was that was throwing, but one of the competitors threw, and the hammer went up and hit the right side, the right panel of the cage, and then flew up over the left side. So it's now outside the cage. It's now outside the hammer cage, and it falls and goes through the table that all of the officials are sitting at. And I'm pretty sure it hit and landed on one of the officials, like one of their foot. Because I think there was a first aid kind of like a truck that came through. And it was so scary. And that's when you realize how much has to go in place for it to be a safe event. But when it is, wow, yeah, it can be a little terrifying. But also when everything is safe and when it's all done and it's okay, it's very, very beautiful to watch the hammer in motion.
There. My story is at Hayward Field. I had an auxiliary ring just to the south side of Hayward Field, and one of the guys, it was a men's competition, and he held on it too long, and being a left turn person, that meant he pulled it, and he pulled it around the cage, so it went out of the cage, but he threw it far enough, but with bad direction, it went over a fence, over a sidewalk, and into a car. Literally, it went right through the front windshield of a car, and everybody's just like stunned. Thank God nobody was hurt, because something like that could be fatal if you get hit by that thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen other hammers fly up over fences, too, and land on sidewalks just in the middle of the competition, and people are walking by. Thankfully, it very rarely happens. And so I think those are my only two. Those are my only two stories from my years of competing. It's all okay.
All right. When it's done right, when you do it right, what is going correct for you?
For me, when it's a really good throw, it means I'm moving the ball a lot. So I'm putting a lot of force on the ball. I'm pushing the ball. And everything, like, I don't have to – everything after that is very automatic. After your first couple of – after your first – yeah, your first two turns. Like, for me, I do four turns. So after my winds, you set the ball up, and then in your first and second turn – it's not that you're still setting the ball up, but you're getting the rhythm. You're getting the rhythm of the hammer. And then after that, you're just putting as much power and force onto the ball as possible. And for me, I let go, and it's just this incredible feeling. It's almost hard to describe. I mean, letting go of this hammer that you're just putting so much into it and letting it go. It's like this feeling of freedom and excitement, and it's almost overwhelming.
My history with hammer throwers is they're not necessarily the biggest guys or the biggest women in the world, because of the spin factor and then the balance factor. What is your thoughts on that? You know, the height versus size and strength.
So hammer is a very interesting sport because it can be more forgiving when it comes to just your size, like the size of the person who is throwing the hammer. So for me, I'm a bit of a smaller thrower. So for me, I have to be faster and I have to be stronger in order to just put more power onto the hammer when I am throwing it. But there's so many different kinds of, body types, exactly. And, I mean, you put the right kind of pressure and force onto the hammer and you can make it fly, which is nice, so.
And most of the times people, as they make that final turn, first of all, you start. It's one of those strange events where you actually start by not looking at where you're going to end up. That is very rare in athletics. Is that correct? Because your back is to the field. You usually start facing the cage in the circle, but you finish facing forward. And more often than not, just because of the way you throw it, your arms end up in the air. And more often than not, in my experience, is that you get a huge scream or yell. Okay. And are you one of those?
I'm not a screamer. And I've never been. I think the most in competition I've ever been able to get out was this quiet kind of grunt, and that was it though. For me, I am I don't really say anything. I don't scream. It's something that you can't force. Yeah. It just kind of comes from, I don't even know, the very bottom pits of just this scream. It's incredible in competition when someone just gets it and they're, oh my gosh, and the sound is so loud and it's amazing, and the crowd gets riled up and everyone gets so pumped up. But I've always been a more quiet person. So
other than maybe huge big meets, like you were in the under 20s and you won the championship last year, you're not always in a big stadium, But some of these places have these really intimate places where there might only be 100 people, but the sound is incredible because everybody's like within 40 feet of each other.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's the case when you have a cage that's not inside yeah. of the stadium. So it's – even if it's close to the stadium and it's right behind or something, that means that you have this smaller location, a little more compact, and people are just crowding around. And especially when you have a support system there and they're just screaming, it just sounds that much louder and you get – that much more filled with anticipation and excitement and adrenaline, and you just want to go. You just want to throw, and it's this incredible, incredible feeling.
Let's talk about the World Championships, the under-20s last year. You won it, but you almost weren't even in the championship round because you threw once, and you did really well. You thought you qualified, and then they come back later and they say it was a foul. But because you only took one throw, feeling that that one throw was going to put you into the next round, you don't take your next two throws. You get three rounds in the preliminaries, and then you get three more in the finals is how it works in most of the field events other than the pole vault and the high jump. But in your case, you must have thought, okay, I'm in, and then they said you fouled. And take us through that.
So when I was in the qualification round, what the situation is there is a certain distance where if you hit it, it's an automatic – it's your automatic qualifying distance. And so for women, it was 62 meters. And so if you threw 62 meters, then that was it because once you qualified, there's no need for you to throw again. So they take you out of the competition and that's it, and you've automatically qualified and you're good to go. So I was in the – I think I was the last thrower of the second flight. What was kind of funny actually was that it was the same position that I was in 2 years before.
Oh, really?
Last thrower of the second flight, I think it was, yeah. And so I threw and I hit the qualifying mark. I believe my mark was 62.99. And so that was it, I thought. And so I walked out of the cage. I was – happy, you know, after that I could rest, I could do whatever it was that I needed to do for the next day, 2 days before the final. Mm-hmm. And I walked out and it was a very short period of time later that we found out that there was a fault, there was a foot foul that I had done that I wasn't aware of that
They didn't call.
And so I wasn't sure if – I'm assuming maybe no one had seen it during the competition. And so they called it. It was when I released. I believe it was my foot had slipped up a little bit on top, the tiniest bit. And so, yeah. So I guess –
usually they get somebody with a flag there and says foul right away.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened, but that was my throw, and so we were waiting to see what would happen because I mean it was a qualification round, so and I only took one throw, so it wasn't like I could go back and throw again, or what? And it wasn't like they had other throws of mine in that round that they could look to the next one of. So we were waiting to see what would happen, and they decided that I would go to the final, but there would be another, a 13th thrower to also come into the final. So there were 13 of us in the final, and that is how I got through in the qualification round. But I was worried. Well, yeah. I was worried going because I wasn't sure if I was going to go to the final or not, and I mean, to have that one throw and leave, I was feeling excited. I was feeling, you know, ready to go. So I'm very happy that I was able to make it to the final round and that their decision was to let me go through.
And as a result, you end up winning the competition. And when they put the gold medal around your neck and play the Canadian national anthem, what was it like for you?
Again, it's an overwhelming feeling. It's because when you're on there, I mean, for me, when I was on there on the podium, it wasn't just me on the podium. It felt like I was representing, I mean, it was myself, but I was representing my country, my family. I was representing my school, Berkeley. And so it was just, I was just so happy, so happy and ecstatic that, you know, and oh, and my team, oh my gosh, Team Canada. So I had a bunch of my teammates that were also there cheering, and it was just, it was the craziest thing to just look over and see them. And my mom went, and Coach Satara from here at school too was there, and it was just absolutely amazing. I mean, all the Team Canada coaches and looking out into the stadium, it's an unforgettable moment.
Yeah, sure it is, that's for sure. So now what do you do as an encore this year? What are the goals this year for you?
Encore? Well, this time go to NCAAs. and then for the summer, there's a lot of different options. It's an exciting year for big competitions, and right now I believe we're looking more to qualifying for Pan Ams. Yeah. So
yeah, I saw that on the schedule that the teams decided to go to those relays as opposed, or are you going to go to Mount SAC as well, or some of the people are going to go to Mount SAC this year as well. So
yes,
those are fun. Yeah, exactly.
So those before are the more summer end of the year goals, but throughout the year, it's just getting the 4K mark up, getting the hammer up, and doing well for indoor. First meets this weekend. We're all super, super pumped to go. So it's going to be an awesome competition. Everyone's looking forward to it.
Maybe one of the best meets, and perennially, maybe the best condensed meet in the United States each and every year is the Prefontaine Classic that's always held in Eugene, Oregon. This year, it's going to be held in the Bay Area, which is exciting. So that's the creme de la creme of track and field. It's just short of the Olympic Games because they don't have all the events. They'll run a 100 and not the 200 or vice versa. So you track fans, that's an opportunity for you to see some of the best in the world this summer in the Prefontaine Classic that for at least this one year will be held in the Bay Area. All right, I understand you're interested in maybe going to law school after your career at Cal. Why your interest in the law profession?
Well, in my grade 12 year, I was able to do a law career and prep program, and I went down to the Supreme Court in Vancouver. Oh my gosh, I think we had to do, it was about 20 hours there. And then it was just spending time in that environment and then doing some work experience in a business law firm too over spring break that year. And I just fell in love. I love the whole atmosphere and the environment that comes along with being in law and being working with policies, and it's just, I don't know, it's a career that I'm really interested in. And to be able to go and, you know, help people who are in dire situations. I mean, it depends also like what field you're in, mm-hmm. but I mean, any of them, you're helping someone fight for themselves, fight for their lives. And I want to be able to be that person.
We got the Bolt Law School here, one of the great law schools in the world, right across the bay. We got the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So, I mean, this is kind of one of the places to be if you're interested in that. My dad was an attorney.
Really?
Yeah, and I remember he said he had a court case one time. I think it was actually for like a drunk driving. It wasn't a huge deal, but it was important.
Very.
Yeah, and his favorite line in court was, "It's easy for the prosecution to make these accusations against my client. They have witnesses and facts. All I have is trickery and deceit."
Oh,
yeah, he won the case.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, wow is right, but that's maybe one reason why I didn't get into law practice, because I didn't have lines like that to win my cases. Anyway, Cameron, we appreciate you being with us. You got a great personality. Again, a world champion, you're a Cal record holder, and you're only a sophomore, so the best is yet to come. Again, thanks for being with us, and good luck this season.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
Cameron Rogers, sophomore hammer thrower for the Bears. They got one home meet in March, the opener early March, And then the Brutus Hamilton, one of the big meets of the year, will be in April. All right, that wraps it up for this week. And bear in mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Thanks to Roman Davis for being with us. The men's basketball team at home Wednesday and Saturday this week against Colorado and Utah. And the women on the road this week as they will face the same two schools. But the mountain travel is one of the more difficult travels this year. They start with nationally ranked Utah on Friday. So until next week, my name's Todd McKim. Thanks for joining us. And as always, go Bears.
Go Bears.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.